Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with the NBA. Now, you knew the Sixers were going to be in for a tough night even before that game started. You knew because Joel Embiid was not at the team shoot-around in the morning. So, of course, the media went to Jimmy Butler and said, "Yo, Buckets, what's up with Joe? How is he doing?"
"I don't know. I didn't talk about him about how he's doing. I can look at him and tell how he's doing."
All right, so he doesn't need to talk to him. Jimmy Butler said, "I can look at this guy and see how he's doing." All right, Jay, how's he look?
"Sickness. Try to stay as far away as I could, to tell you the truth. I love him, but I don't want to be sick either. I hate getting sick."
Hey, we're all like that, right? When you see somebody who's sick, you don't want to go anywhere near them because, well, we hate being sick. Hey, JB, one more thing. One more thing. What do you think the big fella's got?
"I'm not a f***ing doctor. I don't know."
"I'm not a bleeping doctor. I don't know." Well said. So, word comes down that Joe had an upper respiratory infection. So, that's an upper respiratory infection, the ongoing stomach distress, and the knee issue. It's a hell of a long list. Enough to make you burn one of your sick days, which is apparently exactly what the rest of the Sixers did last night, because Toronto played like they were going up against air last night. That was easier than a shoot-around. Final score, Toronto, a billion. Philadelphia, a humiliation. And it went like that all night long because Kawhi did this.
Hand off for Kawhi. Siakam sets a screen. Here's Kawhi.
Look out. Not only that, but Kawhi also did this.
"Can't be a passive offensive player.
Kawhi! The slam dunk on Joel Embiid! How do you like load management now?"
Think about that. If you're not watching on CBS Sports Network, it almost doesn't matter because you can hear it. You can hear the thunder. You can hear the humiliation. Pascal Siakam then did this.
"Category. It's been such a big deal in this series. Look at that block.
Siakam pins it up against the glass.
But a calf feeling a little bit better."
And after he did that, Siakam did this.
"Scott with 10 points off of the bench. Turnover. Gasol. J.J. Redick trying to tie him up. Pascal! Right to the rim. Soaring through the air. The crowd erupting."
And I really want to believe that Marc Gasol way for Joel to come out and guard him at the three-point line, but in truth, it was only for a screen. Then again, who cares? Toronto called their shot. They dominated, and they mocked, and they humiliated Philadelphia in the process. Yes, that process.
Just the process?
That was grown-ass men going up against boys last night. And whereas in previous games, it was all Kawhi, all by himself, last night, his entire crew showed up. Everybody was looking to eat last night. Siakam, Gasol, Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Serge Ibaka, hell, Norman Powell, if you need him. You remember a few days back when everybody was convinced that Kyle Lowry was done, that he was beating people down the court last night. Remember a few days back when Marc Gasol was allegedly washed. That guy was doing whatever the hell he wanted. And remember when Kawhi was packing his bags? Well, now Kawhi is one win away from the conference finals. But let me say this. As good as Toronto was last night, Game 5 was also about how terrible the Sixers were. So where do you want to put the blame? A lot of you are looking to put it all on Joe for his 13 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 turnovers. That's not good. I'll give you that. And a lot of you are rushing in to kill this guy. Except one guy who's not is his own head coach, Brett Brown.
"You know, it's he was trying to do whatever he could to represent his organization and play basketball for the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm kind of disappointed, like he gets shook around to me too much. Like he's trying to play for us. He's trying to get out of bed with a significant temperature and come represent the organization. I think it's grossly unfair. Some of the criticism that he gets, I don't understand that. And so it's not ideal. It's you wished he were at shoot around. You wished he were in film sessions. but he's had a temperature for the last few days that's kept him in bed. And so, you know, take whatever you want out of that answer and end it with, it's not ideal. I wished he was at practice and I wished he was in some film sessions, but he's sick.
All right, so take whatever you can out of that answer. If you know this show and you know me, you know I'm a big Brett Brown guy. This is a big Brett Brown house. Listen, I understand why some people are coming for Joel. Embiid is larger than life. He's huge on the court. He's even bigger in press conferences, and he's an absolute legend online. And he talks a lot. And Philadelphia needs him right now in a big way, just as any team in the playoffs would need their big man who's averaging 28 points, 14 boards, 4 assists, and a couple of blocks a night. But clearly, he's not right. He's trying, but he's not right. Right now, either because of his lungs or his stomach or his knee or all three, which is why Joe taking all the heat for how he's played, to me, is kind of weird. In fact, it's kind of ridiculous. There are some things that you can't play through. If he's spending nearly all of his time between games, nearly all day, either in bed or on the throne, what do you really expect from this guy when the ball goes up? If your point is, yeah, well, he averaged 28 per game in the regular season, he's not doing it now. Right. Exactly. He's sick. That's what happens when you're sick. You generally do not play as well when you're not healthy. So either you think he's not sick and that he's faking it, or the team is covering for him, or you don't understand exactly how it works when you get sick. And then if the issue is, yeah, well, what about his body language? Yeah, okay. Maybe. I guess. But that feels like a reach too. If you're telling me that Joe's body language is the reason why the Sixers are down 3-2 and just got their asses kicked, then you're telling me that the Sixers are not the team that we thought they were. Not if the rest of them can't pick the big fella up when he's hanging. What I'm saying is, their biggest problem is not that Joe is sick, not that he's not playing as well as he did during the regular season. Their biggest problem is other guys aren't stepping up. I mean, Jimmy Butler is doing what he can, but Tobias Harris had 15 last night. J.J. Redick had 3. Ben Simmons had 33 points. Oh, wait, that's in the last 4 games. Right, Simmons, 33 points, last 4 games total. I know this guy's young. I know Toronto is going to throw different looks at him, but 33 points in 4 games can't happen. It just can't. I know he doesn't have a jumper yet, and that if you keep him out of the open floor, he's not nearly as dangerous. But if you're looked at as a potential future MVP candidate, you cannot be invisible in playoff games like this. Simmons is a bigger issue right now than Embiid. Simmons hasn't just become one-dimensional, he's borderline no-dimensional. And that's brutal. I get it. He's young. He's still making the transition from a wing to a point guard. And he's done an amazing job of doing that on the fly. But this is a chance for him to step up, and he's not rising to the occasion. And his team needs him to do so badly. Somebody somewhere needs to find Jared Dudley to give a scouting report on Simmons to shake him out of this. Otherwise, this series is not going back to Toronto. Yes, Joel Embiid is a problem, but not as big as the rest of the guys that he's running with that are not picking him up.
I'm not a f***ing doctor. I don't know.
Hey, Jimmy. What's up, the big fella? What's he got?
Doctor, I don't know.
I'm not a bleeping doctor. I don't know. We are joined by Max Homa. Max, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me. This
Max,
is a real honor.
Yeah, Max, great to talk to you. As we're looking forward to it. Listen, we got a lot of ground to cover, so let me just jump right into it. Take me back. You were tied for the lead after 3 rounds. So what was Saturday night and Sunday morning like? What were the emotions like? What was going through your mind?
A lot. Sunday morning was rough. That was like the biggest stomachache you've ever had. Thought my clock broke 4 or 5 times because I felt like time wasn't moving. But once I got to the course, I felt comfortable all of a sudden and obviously kind of got the ball rolling.
What a great description. Now, you've been through some tough times in your career, and I'll get into that in a minute, but you took the lead with a birdie on 5, then you added a birdie on 7, you stretched it to 4 with birdies early on the back 9, but there were some weather issues, and that led to a long weather delay. It could have shaken you, but it didn't. Exactly what did you do during that weather delay?
I sat by my locker. I called my fiance, asked her not to talk about golf at all, try to distract me, and then I texted my coach said, I think I'm going to throw up. And he said, well, I'm having a beer, so you do you and I'll do me.
That is great. I'll tell you about my man, Johnny O. You know, I sat with John not long ago, met him, heard his story, heard about his company. Great guy. Awesome, awesome guy. But as good a guy as he is, he has an even better invention, the tweener button. Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. What this is a hidden button between the second and third button, and it's featured on all their amazing Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up or too unbuttoned. It really does solve the age-old second button dilemma, namely, do you button one or do you button two? And every Johnny O shirt comes with their patented tweener button, so you're always going to look just right. It is a total game changer. Right now, use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout. That's through May 30th, 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles, and free shipping for orders over $85. Johnny-O.com, promo code ROME, 20% off that first order, free shipping on orders over $85. Johnny-O.com for your tweener shirt at 20% off. Check out the wide selection of shirts and other products ranging from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. Again, Johnny-O.com. Max Homa joining us, and then you're back at it, and you got that downhill 6-foot putt to save par on 14. What was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that if I made that, I win, because I thought it would, show me a lot about myself, show me that I've been in command of my nerves. So once I made that, it kind of all started to feel very possible, very real. But yeah, that was a tough timing for a rain delay, because. You don't really ever want a 6-footer for par, let alone after an hour wait, leading by, three.
Max Homa joining us. Exactly right. And listen, we will get into what you had to go through to get to this point. But when that putt drops on 18 and you know you've won your first PGA Tour event, can you put into words or describe exactly what that felt like?
No, I mean, I didn't plan on yelling. I didn't plan on fist pumping. I didn't have any of that. So I guess it just shows it all kind of flew out of me, man. A lot of frustration. A lot of happiness, a lot of relief. It kind of floods to your brain pretty quick. This game beats you so more often than you beat it. So when you finally get to do it once, especially after a bit of some struggles, it's pure relief and pure joy.
So, Max, so people can fully understand what you and I are kind of talking about, if you go back, you went to Valencia High School here in California. When did you first get into golf?
I actually got in early. I grew up next to Griffith Park Golf Course.
Sure.
So I guess I would go with my dad, and then we moved to Valencia. I played Vista Valencia, home of Jason Gore. So they had a great junior program for a, public par 61 golf course. But I got lucky, man. A lot of my friends played. It's a kind of, an older man's sport, but sometimes you get these areas where a lot of young kids kind of gravitate to the golf course, and I got lucky. So we were able to play and practice quite a bit.
Max Homa joining us. And then you go to Cal, and in 2013, you were the NCAA champion. You beat guys like John Rahm. Then you're on the Walker Cup team with Justin Thomas. What were those days like?
Yeah, that was the good old days, everything felt easy. We were kind of on top of the world. Golf felt pretty simple, and it was a lot of fun. But it was always cool being around those guys, competing with those guys, and then watching those guys succeed so much. Even as I was kind of not doing what they were doing, it was still cool to know that, we had kind of been in the same bubble for quite some time.
So you were killing it then. It was pretty, it's never easy, but it was going pretty smoothly. And then you make the transition to professional golf, and that can be a really bumpy transition for a lot of guys. What was it like for you?
Yeah, right away it was easy, actually, or not easy, but it was kind of the same old. I got ninth in my first PGA Tour event and, was kind of smooth sailing, I thought. And then all of a sudden I started looking around too much, thinking I needed to get a lot better at golf. And, just a slippery slope. You start trying to change little things, and next thing you know, you're not you anymore. And all of a sudden, I kind of lost it a bit. It got bumpy pretty quick. And I just kind of couldn't stop the skid. Until about, two years ago, I hit the lowest you could hit golf-wise and finally started to improve and get back to what I was doing well, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Max Homa joining us. You know, the fact is, on your second year on tour, you missed 15 to 17 cuts. You made a funny joke. You said you were making more money in the pro-ams than you were in tournaments. But like you said, you kind of get down to rock bottom. But you also said when you hit that point, quote, I used to say, when I hit rock bottom, I found a shovel and I kept digging. I went to some low places. I mean, the thing is, you've been one of the best amateur players around. So did you always know that if you kept digging, you'd find your way out eventually? Or did you start to think, you know what, man, maybe it's never going to come back?
Yeah, I had a lot of the negatives. I didn't think it was going to, or I didn't know it was going to come back. But I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to be the guy, you know, that I wanted to be the story that I guess it's kind of turned into. It's a little bit more inspirational. I don't think it happens very often. I think that I set my mind to being tougher than everybody, and I did know that obviously I was pretty good at some point, and I got all these guys that I played with succeeding. So I knew that my game could come back, but I knew that I was going to have to buckle down pretty hard and be super nice to myself and get my attitude about as good as it could be, or else, you know, it was just going to be too hard to battle myself and golf.
Hey, Max, how do you do that? I mean, is it simply a decision? Do you just decide? You know, think about that for 1 second. And I want to say the word relentless is one that's got a lot of significance for you. Like, when did that become an attitude and a mindset? Did you just decide, I'm going to be like this? What's the process?
Yeah, man. I've always been a very self-determined person. That's kind of always been my thing. And, you know, I was sitting back and thinking about golf, and I thought, you know, well, Rory McIlroy hits his driver better than anybody. Justin Thomas hits his 7-iron better than everybody. I'm going to be tougher than everybody, and that was going to be my thing to get back. And, yeah, I guess it just a very big decision I made. You know, obviously the word relentless, that's kind of where I got it from, and I just wanted to buckle down. I thought that if I stayed the course and could get very, very into the process and one day at a time, I thought at some point I could actually be here again.
In other words, maybe the best club in the bag is your mind.
Yeah, it used to not be. That's what's crazy. So some of the struggles might have actually set me up for some success, because I used to be very hard on myself, and all of a sudden I got very big into being positive, very big on being nice to myself, and very, very big on keeping it as simple as possible.
Hey, Max, what's that mean, being nice to yourself? Like, you obviously want to push yourself to be as determined and mentally tough as possible. How do you balance that with being, quote, nice to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still very intense. You know, I want to beat the hell out of everybody. I'm not going to back down to those things. But at the same time, if I had a bad shot, you can't be telling yourself you suck. You can't be telling yourself to quit. You know, you think it's just kind of little words you're saying to yourself, but I think that they cut a little deeper than you think. Golf's a tough sport because you're out there 5 hours, just you and your caddy, and, you know, at times you can kind of get on an island, and that's what I do, and it was just kind of like mental warfare when it was going bad, even when it was going okay at times. So I think that's been the biggest leap I've made.
Max Homa joining us. Max, before you go, I want to say you're a legend on Twitter. And with tweets such as, quote, just witnessed a guy with Southwest priority boarding choose a middle seat. Pretty sure, or pretty discomforting to know, there's a serial killer on my flight, end quote. My man, that's such a great point. What does it say about somebody with a priority pass that they're choosing, that they want the middle seat?
Dude, it was straight up scary. I saw this guy and I couldn't stop looking at him. I didn't know if I was supposed to get off the plane or not. It was frightening. I despise middle seats, so I guess to each their own, but that was a little disheartening for me.
I would say, how about this one? Quote, met a woman at the airport from my hometown. Pretty crazy considering we're so far from home. I lied when she asked where I'm from, obviously because that would lead to more small talk, but crazy nonetheless. End of quote. Look, a lot of pro athletes try to avoid being interesting on Twitter because it might get them in trouble. So what's your approach?
Yeah, I just try to be myself, man. I think someone's always going to hate you. I'm sure, you know, you're much more famous than me. I'm sure that happens a lot more to you. So.
Every hour, my man.
I know I'm a decent person, so I trust that people are going to kind of see that come through.
He is a PGA Tour pro. He was the national champion at Cal, a member of the 2013 Walker Cup team, and he's got his first win. And Max, I'm proud of you. It's great to talk to you. It's always good to talk to a SoCal, who's a great story, man. Really nice to have you on, Max. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me on. This is a real dream for me, pretty surreal.
As you all know, it takes more than just hard work to make it to the pros, the kind of smarts that can read a defense and pick it apart. Hiring is also no different. You need smarts to find the right people, but you don't need to spend years honing your game. You simply need ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, and then it invites them to apply to your job. Try ZipRecruiter right now for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter.com/CLONES. I use it. I love it. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And I got a quick question to start the second hour. What the hell happened in the Game 5s last night? Both of those series were competitive as hell until Game 5 rolled around. Toronto housed Philadelphia. I hit that in hour number one. I mean, when that happened, it was like, all right, that'll happen. It's a one-off. At least we still have Game 5 of Portland-Denver, and that series has been amazing. That's been a fist fight. No way there's a blowout in that game. Denver, 124. Portland, 98. And it was not that close either. That was not a 26-point game. It never felt that close. Denver's largest lead was 31. And even that felt closer than it really was. The Nuggets came back home, and they ran Portland right out of the gym. Man, Denver had it going all night long, big time. And Portland, unfortunately, played their worst game in quite some time at the worst possible time. Nikola Jokic, 25, 19, and 6. Again, the big fella, 25 points, 19 rebounds, 6 assists. He's putting up video game numbers, and he's doing it with ease. And if you haven't spent time watching The Joker yet, I suggest you do just that. Get your popcorn.
Get your popcorn, man.
Watch the big fellow move. Watch the big fella do work. Especially watch him pass, because this guy does things with a basketball that just did not seem possible. Not for a guy that big. You know, like grabbing it off the bounce, rifling it the length of the court the way he did last night. And as usual, it was not just the Joker. Jamal Murray was putting dudes in the mixer again.
To six. Murray shakes Aminu. Wow. Shake and bake. Cooling off the hot hand. Oh. Jamal Murray.
Murray and Joker were making it look very easy last night.
Jokic. The runner is good.
Yikes.
Nikola Jokic.
Back. Watch this pass by Murray, though. He just goes behind the
nice.
Back. It can't be that easy.
Yikes. It was, though. And not only that, then there was Paul Millsap. And he murdered Portland last night. Just one bucket after another en route to 19 in the first half, 24 for the game. Look, I don't want to say that the guy glossed Anchorman is old, so I won't. I'll just find another way to describe Pops. He's like seasoned or experienced. The thing about Paul Millsap, he's so experienced and so seasoned that he started his career playing with guys like Matt Harpering and Brevin Knight. And Brevin Knight played with Sean Kemp and Scott Brooks. So Paul Millsap is about 2 degrees of separation from George Mikan. And for a young team like Denver, that's invaluable. Not just as a leader, but as a guy who's doing the legitimate work on the floor. As a guy who's punishing Portland in the paint. Michael Malone has taken a team that missed the playoffs last year, and now they're one game from the conference finals this year. A team that had next to no playoff experience, and now they're getting all the playoff experience. Like you always hear, act like you've been there before. Much easier said than done. But not for these guys. They're balling out like they've been there before. They're playing like they've lived there for years, especially in the paint and on the glass. Denver outscored Portland in the paint by 22. They out-rebounded them by 18. And this is where Portland really misses Nurk. I mean, they've gone this long without him, and it was fine, but now it's finally catching up with them because they don't have the size or the physicality to deal with Joker and the Anchorman. And on top of that, they're throwing all sorts of looks at Portland's backcourt. Damian Lillard, 9 of 21, 22 points. CJ McCollum, 5 of 16, 12 points. And a Denver team that looked dead, should have been dead, after losing in quadruple overtime on Friday night in Portland. Then they come back less than 48 hours later, and they win, and they tie the series, and now they're up 3-2. I mean, these dudes are no joke. Everything went Denver's way last night, even down to the Joker's ongoing battle with post-game microphones. I told you that Denver wasn't going down without a fight, and then Portland backed that up with that Game 2 win and with that epic Game 3 win. Again, Denver should have been finished then, but they weren't. And now they're in the driver's seat, but that does not mean the series is over. Like, if that series has taught us anything at all, it's that the series is over when the series is finally over. This series will be over when the clock hits triple zeros and somebody has four wins. Damian Lillard says, he insists, Denver has not gotten Portland's best shot. That Portland has not played their best game yet. Of course, Dame did say that before last night's game. Then they got blown out. I don't know, fellas. What are you saving it for? Better have it now, or that season is over. And Denver's tough. But I wouldn't give up on Portland. Not trying to hedge here. You knew it would be a long series. So we'll see what happens now. Damian, and the thing I love about Damian, aside from his game and his leadership, man, the guy's calm. The guy's calm, and he's focused, and he's not panicking. And he says, look, our job is to get the next one. Get the next one, then we'll worry about Game 7. But our focus is on getting the next one.
I think our mindset should be just take care of home. You know, at this point, it's one game at a time. Facing elimination, and we know that we're more than capable of getting it done in the next game.
He's not gripping. And if he is, he's certainly not showing it. Ty Insege is my guest. Ty, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
How you doing, Jim?
Good, good. Ty, how about you?
I'm doing good, man. I can't complain.
Good, good. Listen, I think you've got one of the great all-time stories in terms of walking a long road to get to where you are. And as proof of that, you've got jerseys from 10 teams that you played for along the way hanging in your office. When you first started playing with the Corpus Christi Sharks in the AF2, Ty, start right there. What were those games like back then, and what was your life like?
Well, you know, it was simple. You know, they paid for our living, so I stayed in like a dormitory type style housing unit. And, you know, it was just practice and games. So, you know, if we won, we got paid $150. If we lost, we got paid $100. So after taxes, it came out to about $85, $110. So it wasn't really, we weren't really playing it for the money. You know, it was basically playing it for the opportunity to get a shot to one day play in the NFL.
I mean, Ty, that's amazing. Like, for instance, you're paying the price, though. I mean, you are doing the work, and you're taking real hits. What was it like to grind like that and take that kind of punishment, even if there was a bigger picture down the road, to pay that kind of price physically for $85?
Well, you know, at the time, I was young. So, basically, I just had one goal in mind. So, I really didn't think about what I was going through and what I was putting my body through. I was just thinking about if I competed at the highest level I'm capable of, you know, hopefully I'll get an opportunity to play at the highest level.
All right, so you had a plan, but when you're playing for teams like the Sharks or the Vigilantes or the LA Kiss or in Montreal, was the goal always the NFL, and did that seem close, or did it seem really far away?
Well, the Kiss came when I got released from the Redskins my first time around. So it kind of, the dream kind of felt like it was fading at that time, because I went to the Kiss. And that was after I came from Montreal and I got picked up by the Redskins. So at that point, I was just like, well, I don't know what's going to happen with my football career, but I just need to at least continue playing so I can receive revenue, so I can continue to pay bills until I can figure out what I'm going to do next. At that time, my mind frame really wasn't based on living the dream still. It was just trying to maintain my life.
Ty Insege is joining us. Ty, you mentioned the Kiss. Like, I'm here in L.A. I remember when they dropped. It was kind of a source of fascination. Yeah. Like, did Gene Simmons, did he ever come around? Did you ever talk to the boss?
No, I didn't get to talk to him. I can't even recall who I even talked to be honest with you.
What was that experience like? I mean, is that football, was that, like, disorganized, dysfunctional, or is football football? What was that like?
Well, you know, I don't really want to talk down on an organization that gave me opportunity. So, I mean, It was good for what it was worth. I'll say that.
All right, I respect that, Ty. I see you working. So as you're doing this thing, and you know, you talked about the money you made when you're grinding that thing out, you may have a goal, but what kept you going in those tough times? How did you continue to keep focused and keep putting the time in and grind it out? What was it that kept you going?
Well, you know, I always knew, because when I grew up, when I was young, you know, coming up through Texas 5A football, you know, I was ranked among the elite in high school. So I always knew I had the talent when I was young. So, you know, I got derailed a few times, and I just, deep down inside my heart, I knew I was capable of playing at the highest level. I just needed the opportunity. So when, you know, adversity hit, I had, you know, good friends, good family in my corner that kept me motivated and kept pushing me through the hard times. So that, with the heart that I knew that I had the capability to play at this high level, you know, that kind of helped keep me motivated and keep me going.
Now, that's so important. When you've got people around you saying, I believe in you, you can do this, we know you can do it. Now, at one point, you were with Philadelphia Soul, and you would talk to Ron Jaworski every single day, and he would tell you, man, you're too good to be here. What were those conversations like?
Man, you know, every day in practice, you know, Jaws would be out there watching us and everything, and he'd watch one-on-ones, and he'd be like, man, it's amazing. Your talent is amazing. You know, you should be in their camp. I'm going to do what I can to get you into the Eagles camp. So, you know, I just took that as, you know, that's you know, Jaworski's seen NFL talent. So the fact that he even considered me to be able to be in the same presence with NFL talent, you know, that was amazing. So, you know, I took his word. You know, I figured that, you know, he'd be able to make something happen because it wasn't just a one-time thing. It was a constant thing. He would always say that after games, you know, in practices. So I figured, you know, he'd be able to make a phone call and pull some strings, but unfortunately, that never came to fruition.
Right, Ty? Like, I mean, he's telling you that, you're hearing that, he can be the guy, and then it didn't happen, and then you're waiting again. What was your mindset when that didn't happen?
Oh, man, at that point, I just was like, I'm just keep putting my head down and keep grinding. You know, something has to break for me.
And it did. And you keep grinding, and then finally you get that shot. You're playing for Washington, and you get your first start against the New York Jets in 2015.
Yep.
After all that work, that entire grind, and all that belief, what was it like to make that first start?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I got an athletic ego. So, you know, I was just like, now it's time to showcase my talent to the world. So I just got to do what I do best.
Ty, what did that mean? You have an athletic ego. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, if I line up against somebody, I have pride in my work. So I go out there every down and, you know, I put effort and I put energy into training and to being the best that I can be. So I don't feel I can go out there on a Sunday or on a Thursday and compete and just lay a goose egg. You know, I feel like if I go out there, I'm going to compete at the highest level and I'm going to do the best I can to shut that person down that day.
All right, so then there was a game last year, Ty, week 11 against the Texans. You went up against Jadeveon Clowney. You had a huge performance. What do you remember about preparing for that game and for Clowney in particular?
I just know they got an elite defensive front, so I knew I just had to put in extra time in the film room and in the classroom that week. And, you know, I just felt this was the opportunity, you know, going against an elite talent as Jadeveon. And I just wanted to, you know, perform the best and try to help my team win.
Hey, Ty, did you know, though, after that game, how much attention and how much respect you would earn because of your performance?
Oh, man, you know, it's not just one game. You know, one game doesn't win divisions. One game doesn't win playoffs, you know. So it's you know, the goal of last year was for us to try to compete for a championship. And, you know, that's what the main motivation was, you know, try to stack wins.
And then you hit free agency. I understand that you're all about the team. You're about big picture. But then Buffalo offered you a two-year deal, Ty, worth a good chunk of change. I'm being really straight when I say this. I don't know anybody who's earned that contract like you've earned that contract. Man, you have earned that money. What was that moment like, Ty?
I appreciate that. Oh, man. I had to take a seat and just thank God, man. It's been a long road. It's been a long journey. And the fact that I'm able to provide for my family and you know, my son and generations, to where, you know, they don't have to go through the same struggle and the same adversity that I had to go through. You know, it's a wonderful feeling.
You know, Ty, you know what I think is really neat about this? The Bills, they love your talent. They love your ability to play multiple spots. But they also say they want to bring you in because of your character and your perseverance. How much does that mean to you that they want you not just because you're a good player, because of your potential impact on their culture?
Well, you know, coming from my background of being on several different teams, you know, it's hard to get that feeling of want. You know, you always yearn to be wanted somewhere, you know, to actually be appreciated of your talent and everything, not just as a number or, you know, as a guy that if if the main guy goes down, we're capable at backup. You know, to come to Buffalo and get that feeling like I'm one of the family, you know, that's a beautiful feeling. You know, I haven't had that feeling in a long time, and it's a great thing to have here.
Hey, Ty, I got about a minute left. I got to ask you, if somebody's listening right now who's got a dream and they're chasing it, but they feel beaten down and they want to give in and they want to give up, what's your advice?
Man, just stay humble, stay focused, and you know, put all your faith in God. And everything happens for a reason. You know, like the chip's going to fall, how the chip's going to fall. You can only worry about what you can control. So, you know, just go out there and prepare for when your time does come so you're not unprepared, and go take full advantage of it.
What a great message. Bills Mafia, you have to love this. He signed with Buffalo in March. He is an offensive lineman now for the Bills. He's got that multi-year contract and a great, great story. Ty Insege. Ty, so good to have you on. Let's do it again during the season if you don't mind.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Contractors can rely on Ferguson to provide a winning game plan for any job, any day. Thanks to their pro pickup service, you can choose from thousands of products to order online and pick up in store, which makes doing business with Ferguson the easiest part of your day. We're now just 44 days out from the 25th edition of the most important day of the year on this program, the Smack Off, the so-called Silver Smack Off, a quarter century milestone of the biggest and best event on the format, featuring the biggest and best callers to ever do it. From JT the Brick way back in 1995 to Brad in Corona last year, many have tried. Only 14 have ever won. 14 different guys have made it up the Jungle's Butler Cabin. And of the 14 champs, only 5 have ever done it more than once. So heading into June 21st, next month, the storylines coming in are endless. And if you're part of the overwhelming majority who will not be participating on that day, you have a lot to look forward to, a lot to get hyped about. And I'll do a deeper dive on the threads that make June 21st so compelling as we get even closer. But here are some early storylines that you might want to consider. Starting with the Canadian Bros. Matt in Van and Tyler in Edmonton. These hooligans showed up on the phones right around the same time back in 2016. They've been mainstays ever since. Both guys ripped golden tickets. Both guys have been in the last two smack-offs. Both guys have made a difference. Both guys have planted their flags. Both guys have made their mark, except not on that day, not in the smack-off. Tyler has not hit the board yet. Matt barely snuck in with a 10th place finish last year. Unfortunately for them, so far, their young smack-off careers have been defined by their respective headshots winding up on Brad in Corona's man thong. So the question now is, do either one of them have what it takes to beat the guy that buried them last year? Matt and Van said last week that he's coming for everybody.
And Rome, I'm putting the whole smack-off field on notice. I'm cutting through everyone in the field who gets in my way, Rome. Foreign and domestic.
You heard him say it. He's coming for everybody, foreign and domestic. I mean, I don't know what that means. Maybe he's willing to go after his own. Tyler, we'll see. I don't know. I just know that these guys each need a good showing next month as much as anybody. And I think they will. I think they will. Sometimes it's a process. And how about Rick? Rick in Buffalo, he came in a little bit earlier today on Twitter. He made his smack-off debut last year, and he finished 7th.
And there's no bigger a-hole Yankee fan out there than my old man. He's the type of insufferable D-bag who brags about having seen every inning of every game since 1960. Sure you have, you fat ass. Funny how you leave out the fact you sleep through the last 3 innings every night. And your snoring's really starting to piss off Mom. And I'm sick of her calling me to bitch about it.
Rick in Buffalo burying his old man. Sure you have, fat ass. Nobody in the jungle in the last 2 years has posed a bigger threat than this guy, arguably. Whether you love that guy or you hate that guy or you think he's a Jeff from Richmond knockoff, you can't deny the game. You can't deny the heart. You can't deny that he'll give you the hands. He's never backed down from a fight. He is the classic, original, likes to fight guy from Buffalo. He's gone after Lef. He's gone after Vic. He's gone after Mark. He's held his own. The one guy he has not taken a swing at, though, is Brad. But you have to know that's coming. He has to. Now, lately I've noticed that Rick, other than that tweet earlier today, has been laying out. I'm not sure if that's intentional. It must be. But he was the first to RSVP this year, so I expect him to take a big swing come June. Then you got Benny and Wisco. Benny and Wisco is another guy that you want to watch out for. Dude transitioned nicely from rat family calls exclusively to smack-off-worthy calls almost overnight back in 2017. And he has finished top five in each of the last two main events.
Hey, did everyone catch Lef and Laguna's RSVP videos? Man, oh man, there are plenty of cringeworthy items to take away from them, but none more prominent than that plastic scepter and plastic crown you were sporting. A helium balloon in studio a couple of years ago, a plastic scepter and crown this year. What are you, the king of Party City?
So, I don't know, man. He's sneaky funny like that, right? I mean, there's something undeniably different about a Benny call. The question is, he's got game, but does his best beat the best? We'll find out on the 21st. Same state. In fact, I was there over the weekend. Wisco. Also, Caleb in Green Bay, who I've called one of the best to never win. It's a compliment. This is a guy who's hit the board in each of the last four smack-offs that he's been in. I expect the same coming in at number five. But, you know, Caleb wants more than that. He doesn't only want to hit the board. He wants to win the whole damn thing. And then if he does, nobody would be more vindicated and more validated than Caleb. Imagine a year where the clones and the JTP had to acknowledge Caleb as the champ. There's some premium fuel, some rocket fuel for the Walrus. Can he ride it all the way to a title? We'll see. At least I know he'll be there. The same cannot be said for Mike in Indy, one of the best to ever do it. A former champ. He won it all in 2014. Truth is, I've got no idea what's up with Mike in Indy. Lots of people have theories. I have no idea. If somebody wants to get him this message, I'd appreciate it. Mike, the smack-off is better with you in it. Whatever differences you have, whatever it is that's pissing you off, man, put it aside. The smack-off is better with you in it. The jungle is better with you in it. Last year, Mike retired for about 24 hours before he showed up to the smack-off and finished a very respectable fourth.
I know everybody's saying I'm responsible for the Lef and Laguna rule, banning studio appearances, and that's true. I got that done. But it was to protect Rome against a psychopath like Rick in Buffalo. Rome doesn't exactly have a crew of ass kickers on the other side of that glass. You got Hawk, who threw out his back putting on his shoes. Alvey would just hit the dude, no sound bite, while Keith Arnold takes a hands-off approach, just like he does every day at work. This guy works like he's got a guaranteed contract. I haven't seen him do a damn thing since he showed up.
I'll say it again, Mike. The smack-off is better with you in it, Mike. The jungle is better with you in it, Mike. Where are you? I think Mike's got the win, but thinks he should have five, and is holding that against us. Come on, Mike. Where are you, Mike? No one wants the dub more than him, and I hope that he's there next month and tries to become only the sixth person ever to win multiple titles. Come on, Mike. Where are you, Mike? Mikey De La Creme. I mean, there's so many more storylines that I want to lay out in the coming weeks, like Lef's bid for a third. The possibility, and this would be an all-time jungle story, one of the best ever. What if Jeff and Richmond came back to win and he bookended his wins 17 years apart? That would be one of the greatest things ever. And then, of course, what's at stake for the champ? And right now it is Brad versus the field. Who do you have, Brad or the field? There's that much distance between him and everybody else right now. What's at stake for him? He's trying to go back-to-back. He's never done that before, and he's trying to run down the Cablanation for most championships of all time. But the point is this. You do this for 25 years, you're going to have an event that is dripping in history. And whether you've heard all 24 smack-offs before this one, or you've never heard a single smack-off, it's my damn job to get you caught up and reset and ready for June 21st. I don't just put this thing up and then kick my feet up and listen. I do it because it is the most important event on Sports Talk Radio. There's a bar. There's a responsibility. And if you don't know it now, you will. Trust me on that. I'll make sure of it. So will the legends that come through the day of. Smackoff 25, the Silver Smackoff, storylines, 4 days. More to come on all of that. But for now, we are 44 days away, 44 sleeps away from the Silver anniversary. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Who do you have? Who you got? Speaking of the devil, or one of them, I mentioned. Didn't I start that entire take, that preview with the bros from Canada? Here's one, Tyler in Edmonton. Tyler, what's up? How you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
Great.
Good. All right, Romy. Well, I'm going to do this once for this little stalker kid in Harrisburg. Listen, Jason, why you got to throw a shade at Hawk like that?
Did you not know that less than 0.5% of people have ever run a marathon? Now take that number and divide it by about 300 billion, and that's how many people have ever been in the smack-off. You, my friend, are in the other 99.99999%.
Now, Jason, the other day you had a call about me being a baggy Little League coach or something, and there's something you need to know because, you see, I actually skipped that whole part in the coaching ranks. I went straight from playing junior to head coaching Bantam and Midget AAA teams. And just like everything I do, Jason, I was pretty good at it. Let's just say some of those kids may or may not be on the under-18 national team. Now, the reason I bring that up is because I see a lot of similarities between you and some of those grinder trial kids we would get. You know the ones. Those kids that had all the spirit in the world, great work ethic, great attitude, but they just lack the speed, skill, stamina, and talent to make any of our team. That's you, Jason. You're the kid I'd keep around past the first cuts as a little pat on the back, and then I'd send your ass down to Tier 3 where you belong. Just like Rome is going to do to you with your little smack-off tryout. And by the way, bro, it was real nice of you to call a nationally syndicated radio and TV show to tell everyone about that wet dream you had the other night. You'll be excited to know that I'm coming in with fresh new pictures this year, you know, because I'm sure your little well of fantasy imagination is running dry on the ones I sent in last year. So just do me a favor and make sure you only screenshot the ones that don't include me when you tuck yourself into bed at night, all right, you little creep? War of the Jungle starting an honorary rat family called the Rit family. It's like a rat family, but for people with cul-de-sac haircuts. I'm out.
Tyler. Go ahead, Alvin. Do what you want to do with that one. You got that, you little creep? Jason in Harrisburg? I like that about the Canadian bros. I love that. They're not laying out. They'll show up. They're not hoarding their material. They're not going to wait until the week of RSVP. They come with a big hammer. They're playing the game. They're going to play right through. Tyler in Shredmonton. Let's try Orion. But he's no longer in Waterford. Orion, wherever you are, what's up, man?
What's going on, Jim? So this dude, Cal in Vegas, right, keeps hitting me up. Keeps sliding into my DMs. We should do a tandem call, bro. Let's do a tandem call. It'll be a lot of fun. Finally, I agreed. All right, Cal, let's do a tandem call. So, Cal, are you there, Cal?
Oh, yeah, Ryan. I'm here.
All right, little buddy. Why don't you tell the people what you got today?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think Blue's Clues so much better than Scooby-Doo. I don't get Scooby-Doo. It's stupid. How can you be the owner of the haunted amusement park and the ghost at the same time? That's really dumb. And I'm, like, really smart. Oh, wait, there's someone at my door. Hold on.
Oi! Oi, here! You've been threatening to rip me beard off! Oi! Where are you going? Get back here! Come here! Come here!
Wow, Rome. That's amazing. Looks like Connor finally caught up with Cal. Gee, I don't know if Cal's going to be healthy enough for the smack off after that, because it looks like his mouth finally ran into Connor's fist. Well, that's what happens when you constantly run your mouth at people who are way out of your league, dude. And speaking of people who run their mouth, who is this Wookiee human Sasquatch hybrid running around the woods going, Listen, Dan, dude, Dollar Shave Club, bro. Promo code Rome, homie, for real. And Danny boy, Danny, you have to know, you're only in the smack off as a sacrificial lamb, right? You do realize that you are merely there as a sacrifice to the gods of Greater Smack. You are there to be bled, so Greater Smackers...
That's not a good call. No.
He's putting in his time.
I don't like that call.
All right, Orion.
Not a very good call.
AJ Hinch joins us once again. AJ, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. Skip, good to talk to you. So you dropped a tough one to Kansas City last night, and AJ said afterwards, quote, those games hurt today because nobody likes to get their teeth kicked in. They hurt furthermore because it cuts into your pen, end quote. It'll happen, but how do you try to bounce back tonight?
Yeah, you know, I think you just wash it away. I think sometimes those are easier mentally. You know, you get your brains beat in, you get to the next day, and you just kind of cleanse yourself. Enjoy your day, get to the game, and forget it ever happened. The one-run loss probably would have been worse, but they took it to us. Two grand slams in one day. We usually like doing that to other teams. We don't like it when they do it to us. So the boys will show up. We've got a good game plan tonight. We got a chance to win a home series. And if Rockets are playing the Golden State Warriors tonight, we want a fast game so we can watch it, and then we will we'll get back to the winning ways.
AJ Hinch joining us. So what do you make of that series? How do you think your Rockets show up tonight?
I think they show up, man. They know they kind of rise to the occasion all the time. So I we're pretty tight with the Rockets. Our guys go to a lot of the games. Jim Crane, our owner, has some seats right on the floor, so he hooks us up with some front row seats. We haven't been good at making the first charity shots. I told the boys in spring training, like, Reddick made it, Correa made it, but McCullers no, Altuve no, Crane no, Springer no. So good thing they're better shooters than my guys.
Right. AJ Hinch joining us. You mentioned Correa. He went hitless last night, which ended his 16-game hitting streak, though. You know, he went through that tough season last year, both in terms of injuries and production. He's come back really strong. As you've watched him so far this year, AJ, how close is he to the old Carlos Correa?
Very, very close, and if not better. You know, his game is really good. His preparation is good. I think he's taken these early injuries in his career very seriously. So his rehab program, he's got a good regimen that he's on. He's in a good place mentally. He's got a chip on his shoulder about his defense. And so we've made him make some highlight reel plays. He's an all-around talent. He just hangs out in the middle of our order. And a lot of attention has been on him since the day he got here. And he's a big-time player, and his offense this season has been really good. Obviously, it's a tough streak to come to an end last night. He goes 0-for. It was a good run. He can put together another good one. But the hit to all field, the power, the vibe that he's carrying, the way he's carrying himself on the field, all very good Carlos Correa signs that he's going to have a good season.
AJ Hinch, manager of the Astros, joining us. I'm going to try and double back to the point about the defense in a minute. But when you and I spoke in spring training, we talked about the attitude in your clubhouse and Alex Bregman saying that everybody felt like they were punched in the mouth last season. Nearly a quarter of the way through this season, how has that attitude been showing up on a daily basis? Do you see it?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, we're in first place, no complaints. We've won a lot of series. There's a few games that we've given away that we probably could have played better, and I like that 6-7 games over 500 is not good enough. We feel like we're operating at a decent level, but not 100% yet, and the guys expect to win. So I don't worry about our prep. I don't worry about the vibe or the culture that we have. Bregman is certainly the edge that we have in our clubhouse. That's been good to see. I mean, he's hitting, I think, over 300, had a couple homers, and he called himself out and said, I'm the softest 300 hitter in baseball. So there's like a good level of hunger in our clubhouse, and our guys are posting every day. So, it's May, we start to get closer to Memorial Day. That's when people start labeling, kind of where everybody's at. But our standards are super high, man. And the guys come to the field expecting to win, and we're doing enough of it.
That's a great line about Bregman. I'm the softest 300 guy there is. That sounds exactly like Bregman. You know, and then you mentioned the defense, AJ. The team is playing. One of the guys who is making big-time defensive plays, big-time defensive player, of course, Jose Altuve, he might not be swinging the bat the way he'd like, at least at this moment. But what's it say about him that he still finds ways to contribute and keeps coming up with huge defensive plays, even if he's not swinging that hot bat yet?
Yeah, and it's important because so much of his identity is built around the offense. I mean, he's got the 200-hit season. He's got the batting titles. He's the all-star. Everything is about Altuve's at bats, and I get asked all the time. You know, he goes 0-for-4. What's wrong with him? He goes a couple games and he doesn't do damage. What's wrong with him? But he brings so much more to the team. And the other night was a perfect example. He is scuffling at the plate, frustrated, not getting as many hits as he needs to. He's still drawing a few walks. He's being productive. I'm not moving him out of the two hole. This is one of our guys, and you know, he's grounded into a couple double plays. He's just doing some uncharacteristic things at the plate, but yet we don't win the game the other night against Kansas City without his two plays at second base where he bare hands and throws to first base on these slow rollers. They got these fast dudes at Mondesi and Hamilton and Merrifield that the Royals can throw out there. And so I texted him after the game. I'm like, we don't win without your defense. And it's probably the first time I've talked to him about his defense, you know, over his offense in my 5 years with him. And he needs to be reminded that the Gold Glove that he won back in 2015 is real. The thing he can bring to the field every day, even if he's not hitting, is this energy and this defense, and it's showing up for us.
AJ Hinch joining us. I like that a lot. Now, Michael Brantley has flashed some leather of late. He's second in the AL in batting. AJ, I've got to think that you were pumped when he signed, but what has he shown you so far as a player and a guy in that clubhouse?
He's a perfect signed player for us in free agent this offseason. Jeff Luhnow, front office, asked what we wanted. We wanted some balance in our lineup. We got these big-time right-handed hitters. We want a lefty. Michael Brantley's out there. We're going to play him in left field. And it's funny. I tell you, it's like things that go on behind the scenes you don't know about. A couple weeks ago, I went to him and I said, hey, I'm gonna defensive replace for you. I got Jake Mariznick, you know, Gold Glove power center fielder who can come in late in defense. I moved Josh Reddick to left field, George Springer to right field. It's my best outfield defense I can put out there. So, hey, just a heads up. As a veteran, I respect you. It's not about you. It's more about pro Mariznick. So that night he makes a running catch in the gap in left center field, and he comes up to me and he's like, you might want to reconsider that defensive replacement. You know, he's got such a fun vibe about him, and he's right. You know, the other night he makes a diving catch to end the game. He's so consistent. He brings a routine that's helped Springer and a presence in the middle of our order. And it took a special guy for me to interrupt the Springer, Altuve, Bregman, Correa, Gurriel top five hitters in our lineup, and he fits right in there in the four hole, and I love it.
That's a great story. AJ, when you say he brings a routine, I mean, doesn't everybody have a routine? What is it that his routine is, or how is it different, and how does that help guys?
I mean, I think you'd be a little surprised. I mean, most guys have a routine that doesn't make it a good one.
Okay.
So he brings a good one. You know, whether it's, you know, he likes to control the volume of his swings. If I throw our coaches out there and our we got a bullpen catcher named Javier Bracamonte. He's famous here in Houston, and he can throw for an hour BP. These guys will hit until they can't hold their arms up anymore. Brantley will bring a more dedicated, I'm going to take a certain number of swings, and I'm going to get myself ready for the game. Or his just the way he studies video, the way that he prepares his game plan with our coaches and our analytics team. I mean, there's a professionalism. All of our guys have it. There's a routine. All of our guys have it. But the guys that can do it year after year after year, you should dig into maybe the subtleties of their routine and grab something from it. And I've seen Springer do it. I see Bregman around him a little bit. I see Carlos around him a little bit. So there's a veteran presence that, you know, that you might not know on the field, but you know behind the scenes.
Glad I asked. AJ Hinch, that's really interesting. So before you go, last week you passed Art Howe for third place in the organization's all-time win list. I understand you're not focused on things like that, but you played for Art back in Oakland. You know what he's about. So what's it mean to have your name right up there with his?
Oh, man, my first manager. He's my first ever major league manager, and I'm sitting here doing interviews about passing him on the Astros win.
Right.
And that's really, really cool. That was back in the day we were doing tour buses. I think it was when I got to come on your bus a couple times. And I was playing for the A's. Art Howe's my manager, and
love
now
it.
We're talking about, you know, me exceeding him with the wins. And, you know, obviously it's the players and and the environment we have here and the winning that we've done, and it's in my coaches. We've had a number of different coaches come, and the manager, you know, we probably get a little too much credit and a little too much blame. That's cool. It's the nature of our job. But passing a name that was recognizable for me and also very special to me as the first guy that pulled me in the office and said, hey, man, you're a big leaguer, you can imagine how cool that was for me.
That's the best moment ever. Now, the team, AJ, is having Pino in the Park on Friday against the Rangers. You are no stranger to the wine scene. So if you're going to go the Pino, what are you picking?
I'm going Sea Smoke Pino. There's a couple different ones that Sea Smoke has. I like it's, you know, I'm a kind of big Russian River Pino. I like it. It's a little firmer, stronger, kind of like a cab.
Sure.
So I go with that anytime I get a chance to drink my Pino.
When did you first get into wine? Who got you started?
Really, when I started playing, and I started having a veteran team around me. You know, when I broke in, we had a bunch of hoodlums on the team in Oakland. We were young and stupid, and we had a good time. But when I started graduating to more mature teams, when I played in Philly, and you know, you're around the Jim Thome and Kevin Millwoods and Billy Wagner, and I played with Roberto Hernandez, and I started slowly getting into it. And then when Dave Roberts and I got close when I was in San Diego post playing days, I started hearing a little bit more about his. He's got a label in Napa called Red Stitch, and he got me into it a little bit. And slowly but surely, I've grown up, and now I dig all kinds of wines.
I love it. So that's a good one. That's coming up soon. He is manager of the Astros. He led them to their first World Series title back in 2017. A member of the Stanford Athletics Hall of Fame. We consider him a very good friend of the program, AJ Hinch. AJ, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. Always good to have you on.
Thank you, Jim. Anytime.
Rome, when Alvin drops the hammer on a caller, it used to be just a buzzer. Now it's all sorts of crazy sounds. What is packed into the hammer? Signed, Damien. Good question. All right, let's unpack this thing sound by sound. First, you have the buzzer. The original buzzer. Then several years later, and several years ago, I mentioned that, you know, back in the day when we all had hard lines, actual telephone lines in our homes, that if a telemarketer called during dinner, I would pick up the phone, and if they went into a pitch, I'd go with the manual buzzer. I would just yell on the phone as loud as I could and then hang up. And for whatever reason, you know, I was kind of a dope. I thought that was funny. That made me laugh every single time. And Janet would be like, man, how old are you? I'm like, 40. It's funny though, right? She's like, no. I'm like, oh, it's funny, all right. And then I'd be pissed if somebody didn't call. Then I would just start doing it to friends. You know, like one of Janet's friends would call. Hi, Jimmy, it's Martha. So anyway, that became the thing. So I went from the original buzzer to the manual buzzer, but that didn't last very long because then LaDainian Tomlinson dropped a rap while he was a member of the Chargers.
I got a little dance for y'all. It's real easy to do.
The LT Glide.
All you gotta do is glide with it.
So, we did a take on the LT Glide, and this is when the jungle is at its very best, when you clones work for me. Somebody called or somebody emailed and said, hey, Rome, you know what you should do? You should lift that line from the LT Glide and combine that with your manual buzzer. And that's how we ended up with this.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
It's not a very good call. The clone, that was clone originated. So, Damien, that's how that came to be. That's a good ATP. When the ATP works, it works really well. Speaking of Detroit, this is getting weird now. Let's go to Johnny in the D. Leave that up, Albie. That should be under his call. Johnny, what's up?
Jimmy, hey, last week Liz called and said someone was pretending to be her. You know, if I wanted to be a fat, wrinkly, postmenopausal female, I'd rather be Caleb in Green Bay. I noticed you left Cal in Vegas out of your Smackoff preview. The last time Cal in Vegas was left behind, his parents dropped him off at the fire department after birth. Bro, Matt and Van threatening to come after the Smackoff field must have everyone shaking. The last time I checked, you can't win the Indy 500 with a minivan. War stuck nut, late.
I don't know. Like, that shouldn't have been funny, but that was funny.
Good night now!